do 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 do.
See, I'm I gotta wait 5 seconds because there's an advertisement. Of course. Come on, come on, come on, come on.
There.
Okay, I mean, I think it's working. I gotta wait 5 seconds because
there's an advertisement. I can't watch this Twitch chat room today, but hi, everybody. Welcome to the Professional Goblins Podcast. Hopefully, we will soon be joined by Scott, but he is late transiting from work today. So it is just myself and the wonderful...
Me?
Both of you. Either one of you can go.
I thought Savannah was going to introduce herself first.
Oh, yeah, no, I was. I was listening to myself on the stream. So, hi, everyone. I'm Savannah Broadway. This is the lovely co-star, Peli.
And then today we have our guest is Clinton Boomer, who is one of my favorite people. Woo! Like, seriously, oh, Clinton's the best.
Good people.
Clinton, okay.
Who how would people know who you are? Tell us how you've touched our lives.
I try to touch as many lives as possible. I first started doing Pathfinder stuff, or I guess back 3.5 material with RPG Superstar back in 2008, I want to say.
Jeez.
But 2007 maybe. But it's been about a decade. I did. It was the very first. It was the inaugural RPG Superstar, which was me, Jason Nelson, Rob McCreary, Rob McCreary, of course, over at Paizo, Jason Nelson of Legendary Games, a ton of other people who are also amazing. And I want to be very clear, none of the three of us, because the three of us all made it to the top four, not one of us won. Christine Schneider beat all three of us, hands down, beat us like redheaded stepchildren, and more power to her. Every once in a while, people be like, oh, dude, you won RPG Superstar. I'm like, I did nothing of the sort. I like Jason Nelson and Robert Creary, fell short of that glory. And let's just, yeah. Well, every once in a while, a bunch of RPG Superstar, like people who've won it, will get together and like high five. I was just like, that's cool. You guys have your high five. I'll just sit over here angrily drinking.
But you were like winning adjacent.
Absolutely. Very close to. And I think it's important to remember that year of RPG Superstar had a relatively low participation rate. Like, I remember.
I mean, it was
like,
the first one.
It was the first one. So I remember somebody's like, man, I wish I'd made it to the final four. I'm like, well.
there were eight of us.
I did, but it, like, yeah, there weren't as many players at the time. Like, if you'd done it my year, you probably would have beat me to the final four.
Like, it wasn't worth it to find out the forbidden knowledge I now possess, and I would do anything to be rid of it.
I have a lot of love for RPG Superstar, and I wish they were still doing it. I think, because if I'm not mistaken, it's done now, am I right?
I mean, it's on hiatus. I don't know if they've completely abandoned it. I hope not, because it is a really great contest, and like, yeah.
Some really cool shit comes out of it.
It's true.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If I had the money and the time and the energy, of which I have none. I have no money, I have no time, no energy. Or competence. I should be very clear. I would need competence to do this as well, which I have none of. If I had any of those things, I would just throw it at doing more RPG Superstar. I think it was like a huge boon to the community. present company accepted, huge boon to the community. I think brought new voices. If anyone out there happens to have a multi-million-dollar publishing company like Paizo circa 2007, I would encourage you to do it yourself.
You've done a lot of stuff other than be a finalist in RPG Superstar.
So what? Oh, what have I done other than that?
Yeah.
Oh, a ton of stuff. So that was a decade ago. Not to harp on that. I before that, funny enough, I did. Every once in a while, people will still get a hold of me and be like, "Oh, hey, I loved those D&D PHB."
PSAs. Ah, that's right. I forget about the PSAs. Oh my god.
I forget about those too, but they.
I'm not aware of these. Please explain.
Oh, you are a lucky young woman. I did. Oh wow. Okay.
They're actually not that bad. Savannah, she was just saying earlier today how much she loves bad videos, but like they're
pretty
good
videos. I was gonna say,
like
compare it to the video that I watched
the
this
dude
morning.
Earlier today is like a 0.5. These are more like a 5.5, 6.5.
Oh well, there we go. See, you are fine.
It's okay. The D&D PHB PSAs. This was a very strange idea. I had a good buddy of mine. We're still good buddies. I never see the man. Named Wes Whitaker, who was at the time a student, I believe directing, acting, la 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 la. At Western Illinois University, which is used to live in Macomb, Illinois, which is, I mean, I now live about 7.5 hours north of that. But he was a university student, theater department, and he came to me at one point. He was like, "Hey, man, you're a writer, am I correct?" I was like, "Oh, yeah, I mean, I write. Yeah, that's like a thing I do." And he was like, "I basically at this time, I have a camera, like not a good quality camera, but a camera. I have digital like video editing software. I have a computer. I basically have all the things I would need, and I have just access to a bunch of like talent, like all these incredibly talented college students. I mean, the entire theater department, they're all great people. He was the head of a improvisational like acting troupe, like comedy, like
things. I love improv.
Yeah, like Upright Citizens Brigade, like actually they opened for Upright Citizens Brigade.
Oh, that's
like
awesome.
Yeah, you know, when they came to Western to perform. Like these guys were amazing. The Jackalopes was the name of them. And yeah, the Jackalopes, they're super fun. And he's like, "Yeah, I have all these people. Like, the problem is I don't have a script. Like, would you be willing to produce material that my guys could perform?" I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, consider it done. And so we sat down and we worked on a bunch of different projects, 90% of which like never ever saw the light of day. He was a giant Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, and so was I. So a ton of like completely unusable material, I want to be very clear, completely unusable, was a spin-off of Buffy, because the big thing was like, "Oh, we'll put it on YouTube for free, like that, like we can do this," and but it was gonna take place at a little college, so it was gonna kind of feel like season four of Buffy, and it was just Sunny was the name. I don't know if all right, is anyone here a Buffy fan?
I'm a Sunnyvale. I know. Yeah.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. But it was
Sarah Michelle Gellar was very appealing to 13-year-olds. Of my time.
Oh yeah, it's great stuff. We love, yeah, yeah. Dude, Buffy was amazing. I want to be very clear. I've seen every single episode of Buffy and every single episode of Angel.
I have like, not.
Like have recently, not. Like not just I've seen all of them, like when they came out, and also on DVD. I also have watched them on Netflix, like within the last year.
Dedication.
Yeah, quite a fan. But yeah, so it was this real goofy, basically like, "Oh, let's make a season of television." It was about a girl, a young woman, Darlene Hunn, amazing actress, who later did the PSAs with us. She played Mei Li, the Elven Wizard. But at the time, we were like, "Oh, we want to have her as a vampire slayer." Her name was Sunshine, so she went by Sunny, and she ran around with a boken, like one of like the big wooden like katanas, like the wooden practice swords used for kendo, and that she would beat the shit out of vampires and like with a big wooden thing, and then like stake them, and like then. Like keep like just walking around campus, and that she was like fun and quirky, and she was really mean, and just sassy. And then we like came up with all these other characters who were like her buddies, and yeah, I mean we had an entire season. We read scripts for 2-3 episodes. We had like here's the full arc. Here's everything that's gonna happen. We had like a 50-person cast. We had principal photography done, and we're just like, this is hard.
I bet it is.
Yeah, making a TV show is hard. Like it's so much work. Before you have a single episode out, you've done hundreds of hours of like backbreaking, painstaking, like eye bleeding labor, and I'm tired. God, it's a nightmare. And so the great lesson of the PSAs to me has always been think smaller. Like whatever you think you can do, don't do that. Do something
in half.
You do an eighth the size, and like whatever that is, do it an eighth the size of that. So we were like, okay, well let's instead of doing a 13-hour season of like, or yeah, 13-hour season of like 13 episodes, each one of them an hour long, like la 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 la, with 50-person cast. Instead, let's make a 2-hour movie. That failed. They're like, let's make a 30-minute short. That failed. Like, let's do a 5-minute Saturday Night Live clip.
There you go.
Fail.
Oh.
So like, let's get 30 seconds. Let's do a public service announcement. That's the easiest form of filmmaking. Right, a guy sits down in a chair and is like, "Don't hit your kids." Right? Or, that's it. Right, and I'm just like, those are, and those can be really funny. That's a sketch. Vine videos have taught us, if they've taught us anything, I mean, maybe they have. If they have taught us anything, it's that you can do very short, very compact comedy.
Yeah. And
like PSAs, at the end of the day, it's, I mean, Conan O'Brien used to do hilarious versions, like parodies of them. I don't know, Conan
Liz,
Conan O'Brien,
if you're watching this, Free Shavakadu.
Hmm?
It's one of my favorite vines.
Oh, okay. I don't.
It's literally just the person looking at a slightly skewed marquee sign and saying "Free Shibakudu," but somehow it's hilarious.
That's art. That's what it is. I'm like, okay, so the entire idea was we had a bunch of actors and a bunch of actresses who were very talented and completely wasted on me, I should be clear. And I was like, hey, here's a funny idea. Can I have you sit down and be like, hi, I'm Lydda, the halfling rogue. I want to talk to you today about sneak attacks. Like, if you ain't sneak attacking, you ain't doing jack shit. You know, and then just on, and we'll clip to a guy be like, hi, Regdar, human fighter. I want to talk to you about power attack. Power attack is the bee's knees, bro. Like, whatever. And we just did these, and we got some amazing... We had the head of the friggin' department. This guy's a published author. He's amazing. He is... if you mention him in some theater circles, people would be like, oh, you studied under Bill Kincaid. We got him on as the Dungeon Master. This is a man who's a Shakespearean scholar with, like, a doctorate in Shakespeare, and he came on to play the Dungeon Master. And be like, haha, bitch, you're dead.
I have to watch
it. I can curse on the show, right?
Go nuts.
All right, cool. Anyway, these were so stupid, and so we did like 50 of them. I'm very proud of them, up to a point for what they are. Everyone else worked incredibly hard, like Wes Whitaker. I worked for incredibly talented people. People poured their heart and their soul into it, and I took off my shirt and I put on belt and was like, hi, Hennet, sorcerer and kinky bondage fetishist.
He does have very strange pants, I'm just saying.
I do remember that's going to remain with me until the end of my days, actually, I think.
Yeah, no, I remember the first question when I was first being introduced to D&D. I'm like, how does he go to the bathroom? I don't understand.
Sorcery.
Apparently. Prestidigitation, is that how he undoes all the snaps? Like.
Yeah, and it's a 5-minute process, and they unbelt themselves, and he...
And since you've done the D&D PSAs, you've written in, like, how many first-party publications? Like, two dozen? A dozen?
I've done a bunch since then. It's been really... It's been awesome. So I did the D&D PHB PSAs. That was super fun. I know for a fact that I had at least one or two voters during RPG Superstar who were like, hey, it's Hennet from the PSAs. That guy's an idiot. Like, I'm also the writer. So that was cool. Basically, it's like as soon as I did RPG Superstar, I didn't win, but the very next day I got an email from Paizo, who's like, hey, we are putting together a project. It was at the time the Pathfinder Chronicles campaign setting, which later became like the Intersea World Guide, and that's 90% the same material. And they're like, yeah, we have like 30 authors on this thing. We'd like you to be one of them. You're going to be bottom of the barrel. Like alphabetically, you come after Wolfgang Power and Keith Baker. But, like, let's be really clear, you'll always come behind Wolfgang Power and Keith Baker. Technically, we're putting your name ahead of some much bigger names, but it's only alphabetically. I'm like, you got it, man. And, it was just a delight. I got to kind of play around and help shape Pathfinder's universe. At the time, of course, I didn't know what it would become. But that neat moment of like getting to be one of the first people to like flip through it and be like, ooh, Land of the Lindorm Kings. That looks neat. Like, I'd like to work on that. I didn't get that one. And like flipping through and being like, Nex, like the Nation of Nex. And like seeing the little note of like, oh, this is kind of Eric Mona's thing. Don't mess with it.
Do not touch.
But, yeah, like, oh, okay, cool, cool. Yeah, no problem. But then if I like found Xiaomare, I'm like, oh, Xiaomare, that sounds cool. Oh, it's like a place with like genies and kung fu. Awesome. Like, that's in my wheelhouse. So yeah, I did Xiaomare, I did Nadal, I did the Mwangi Expanse, I did some of the technology guide, because at one point I got a hold of this Mike McCarter, who was the editor at the time. I was like, hey, I noticed that there's guns in this universe, and also cavemen? What about printing presses? Are printing presses a thing? Because like, here in Mwangi Expanse, there's a crashed flying city with like full electrical lighting. do you want to talk about any of that? He's like, yeah, awesome, I'm signing you like 2,000 more words, fix it. I was like, oh, that's how this industry works. Like, okay, I got it.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Right time, right place.
Absolutely. And yeah, it was just really cool. So I got to work on that, and then the two most recent ones I worked on were Ultimate Intrigue and what was the other one? Horror Adventures.
Horror Adventures?
Was it Horror Adventure?
Yeah, I think that is what it's called, yeah.
Oh, and that one's so weird. Okay, yeah. So Ultimate Intrigue and Horror Adventures. Can I tell this story?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, okay. This is kind of weird and funny. So I lucked out and I got like nice emails for both Horror Adventures and Ultimate Intrigue. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, and it was just minor stuff. But for Horror Adventures, the two things I really, really wanted to work on were specifically Kineticists and Alchemists. Because I love Kineticists, I love Alchemists. And so I wrote up a bunch of stuff and I sent it. And then for Ultimate Intrigue, I did a bunch of stuff. Because when I think Intrigue, for whatever reason, I only did magical items for Ultimate Intrigue. For whatever reason, that was like that was what they wanted. And they're like, yeah, we need X number of words on it. I'm like, no problem. So I hammer out my material for that. And when I think Intrigue, my mind always goes back to like Shadowrun and always goes back to this one Ravenloft campaign that a buddy of mine wrote that was like, it was half Ravenloft, half, Shackled City. Do you know Shackled City?
I know, yeah.
Great adventure path. Like that is, if I had one wish, I don't know what I would use it for, but if I had infinite wishes, one of my wishes would be to see Shackled City like really beautifully, because you can get it as the big hardcover now, but it's not Paizo. It is Paizo, but it's not Pathfinder.
Right.
And I would just love to see that like really like beautifully updated in the same way that like Rise of the Rune Lords or Curse of the Crimson Throne has been done.
I wish they would do the Rise of the Rune Lords treatment for the Reign of Winter.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You and me, same wavelength. I feel like the problem is like there isn't an adventure path that isn't someone's favorite.
That's true. Yeah.
To my mind, because I'm just about to start writing a Carrion Crown adventure path, and like God love him, Wes Schneider keeps getting these emails for me where I'm like, hey, there's this thing I wanted to do. And like, God love Wes Schneider. He's always like, hey, I'm like super busy with other stuff right now. But what you say you're going to do sounds great, Booms. Like, take it easy. I would kill to have a version of Carrion Crown that was updated for Occult Adventures, Horror Adventures, Ultimate Intrigue.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's... half the stuff from that has been reprinted here, there, or anywhere.
All the haunts in Carrion Crown alone is a reason to drag a medium into it or something.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I remember, yeah, one of my... that's the other thing. Not to loop off too far, but I have all newbie players. And so I'm doing this super limited, like, paladins are not a playable class. Like, these paladins are just complex enough. Like, if my flavor of paladin and your flavor of paladin don't match... exactly, it's just going to be a role-playing headache.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, you know, I've limited it to seven. It's like fighter, rogue, I mixed ranger, because to my mind ranger is thematically weird, where you're like, oh wait, like I get a pet and I also have nature magic, like, but like Strider doesn't have those, he's like the ultimate ranger. And it was anyway, just la la la. But a bunch of people were like, dude, you're not including paladins. How do you expect your PCs to not all die instantaneously the first time they bump into the haunts? I was like, oh.
The answer is that they should run with a coterie of clerics, because that's the only party that you should send after a bunch of undead.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's not who does get sent after a bunch of undead, but it's who should be.
No,
that's that's my thought. I'm just going to do Gestalt for everybody. Everybody gets a cleric level. It's all Gestalt.
I like it.
That's using my noodle right there.
All right. Well,
I was gonna say, to loop back, la la la. My point being, we just had a funny moment when I think intrigue, I think horror, because of my experience doing Ravenloft meets Shackled City, and so the only things I built for Ultimate Intrigue were objects I wished I could have owned while we were running around in just of like a city where we can trust no one. Where I'm just like, man, wouldn't it have been great if we could have murdered that guy? And then, after we murdered him, sent him out to explain to his wife that everything's okay.
That's terrible.
Right, like, that would have been so useful, right? Like, it's just, we trusted no one. We were, like, living by the skin of our teeth, seat of our pants. Like, it was just us against the world. Everything was horrible.
It sounds like a hypercore game.
Yeah, oh, it was so great. It was just such a great setting, and the GM was so mean, and we just trusted no one. And so like all the items I built were just this, like, okay, if it's you against the world and you just have to murder everyone you meet. But then you're like, man, if only we had this guy's fingerprints now that we've destroyed his body. Don't worry, I got the magic item for you, mister. And so that's what I built. And I bumped into Jason Bullman, who's amazing. I bumped into him at GaryCon, which that's one of the few cons I actually attend. Because, I mean, I can't get to Gen Con. I got a, you know, three-year-old now, eight-month-old, la, la, la. It's too far away. But GaryCon's, like, right down the road from me. And so when I bumped into him, and he was like, oh, hey, dude, BT Dubs, we yanked all your material out of Ultimate Intrigue. I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes me sad. He's like, oh, don't worry. We put it all into Ultimate Horror. I'm like, oh, that's fine. He's like, you're not going to get credit on the book, but you will be paid for it because, I mean, we did buy your material. I'm like, oh, cool, awesome, thank you. And he's like, yeah, you're not going to get credit on it, but, like, all your stuff has popped into Ultimate Horror. I'm like, oh, awesome, thank you, like, no props. And then later I got the email, like, oh, by the way, some of your material for Kineticist and Alchemist has been, like, reworked. And you kind of go, oh, yeah, no problem. Well, I get Ultimate Intrigue. I get the book. I'm flipping through it. I'm like, oh, because I still get my free copy. Like, my free copy comes in the mail. I'm flipping through it, and I'm like, oh, man, this is – wait a minute. My name's not in this, but this is my material. And I was, like, super blown away. I'm like, what happened? Like, what? This is so confusing because they left it in there. I then get Ultimate Horror. None of my material is in it, but my name's in it.
Oh.
Right.
Always weird when you get credit in a book that you didn't work on.
Yeah, so I'm credited for Ultimate Horror. I have not a single word in there because it was all edited or changed, and that's fine. That's the industry. That's how it works. But I'm credited, and I got paid for it. And then there's Ultimate Intrigue where I'm not credited, did get paid for it, but my material's in it. And of course, I get a hold of Jason Goldman, Stephen Wright McFarlane. Everybody's like, dude, we'll fix this problem. And like, as far as I know, it has been fixed. Yeah. But it was just every once in a while, I'll find, like, copies of Ultimate Intrigue in a bookstore and be like, hey, honey, like, let's see if my name's in it. Nope, it's not. Hey, look, here's the thing I wrote. And just kind of give it. But yeah, those are the two most recent things I did for Paizo. There's a chance that they have gotten sick of my whining and as such did not ask me to work on Book of the Damned. I don't know. That might be the reason. But yes, I've worked. But to answer your question, Mike, I've worked on a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Fair. Well, segueing from that, Boomer, do you want to start us off with a favorite character from a game that you are playing in or have played in?
That is the best question I've gotten all day. That is my mind. Okay, so I'm not playing in any games right now, which is really super sad. I was playing in a Carrion Crown campaign, which is basically... it had to be canceled due to availability. So when I think, so I'm casting my mind back, my number one character that I can think of off the top of my head is my buddy Sam. Those of you who are familiar with the D&D PHB PSAs will know him as Tordek Dwarven Fighter. And I want to be clear, that is exactly who he is in real life. Say it, like him as the character of Tordek the Dwarven Fighter, like like elves, like that, just ranting about strip clubs and getting drunk and like swinging axes at people's heads. That is truly Sam. Sam is one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. He's a tattoo artist. I used to be a bouncer at the bar I worked at. He's just a great guy. Super nerd.
So kind of like the guy who wrestled the chimpanzee, Mike. Like a real person who's apparently actually a Pathfinder character.
Well, Sam is my boy. He has run some amazing characters in his day. I've gotten the opportunity to GM him a couple times. I've gotten a chance to like sit at the table with him a couple of times. He played the most bizarre master thrower in a... it was a Planescape game that I ran. And he was like a rogue master thrower, and his name was Matthew, and he was supposed to be from 1980s Earth. Wandering around a Planescape universe, like the Planescape universe, and his big thing was he was on a quest for his shoes. He had like gotten drunk at a bar and somehow wandered down the wrong back alley, bumbled into Sigil, I mean, however you pronounce like the city's name.
Sigil.
And that like had gotten rolled by some tieflings. And they'd taken his shoes, and they were like a really good quality pair of Converse. there's some really good quality Converse, and he really liked them. He did not want to get back to Earth. I think he was actually supposed to be British. I think it was like 1980s London. He had kind of a like Sting kind of vibe. And the idea was supposed to be that he always had inborn magical ability to like shoot pool and like throw darts, and like that he was supposed to be like good with a deck of cards, and that going into a universe where like magic was more prevalent had basically awakened his inborn natural abilities, which is why he was able to like walk into a room and kill 30 people like by shuffling a deck, like kind of Gambit style. But it was like none of it was supernatural. It was just like master thrower, like I now live in a D&D universe. And he only used like improbable throwing devices. Like I think at one point he had a knife and he only used it to like clean his teeth. And he was just a delight. I loved Matthew. And like the first time I'm like, I need this villain. I need Matthew to hate him. Cause he was up for anything, man. The first, like I needed a villain, and this total badass, like Death Knight walks into the room and he's wearing Matthew's Converse.
Oh, and snap.
And I just watched Sam's face drop. He's like, I'm going to kill this man. And just like just a great character where you kind of go, all right, so Planescape, like that's the setting where you can play anything you want, and you're like, yeah, this is me, this is who I want to be, like screw being a demon lord, screw being a vampire, like on. I want to be a man on a quest, like a kind of drunk British dude from the 80s on a quest for his shoes.
I want to add that Converse is the perfect type of shoe for a character in Sigil.
Oh yeah, I actually have to press real quick. I was gonna say, and what I loved is like all the art, because he would do little art pieces of him. He was wearing like a 1980s, like specifically like the British, like the super thin tie. I think he had like a, because he had other stuff. He had like the Union Jack T-shirt, like a suit coat, and I don't know, just like he looked like a, you're kind of punk rocky awesome guy from the 80s. Like smoked cigarettes constantly, and like always had like was fiddling with like a yo-yo or whatever. But and they would draw him with the most ridiculous, like oversized shoes with like the loop-de-loops. He was always looking for something that's not, you know. And he would buy magical boots, and he's like, "Oh, these suck," and he'd throw them away. Kill people with them, and in fury. So yeah, that's my buddy Sam. That's Matthew. I haven't thought about Matthew in a long time. But and of course that was the goofy thing. Everybody had their crazy names. Like I'm Velkor, Master of Darkness. So I am Shalok. You know, the Falky, the Falconator. Like, oh, I'm Matthew.
Like, he's the most have you one. Seen my shoes?
Yeah, I see my shoes. They look kind of like, I have a photograph of them. I drew a picture of my shoes. Do you have your shoes? Just a great character. Anyway, I'm going to go press this button. I'll be right back.
All right.
Sorry, there's something wrong with our battery. Our
no worries.
We're all going to burn it. Basically, the house is going to burn down and no one will know.
It's okay.
Exciting, I guess. Yeah. Ah, gosh, I don't even know what character that I want to talk about this week.
I'm going to talk about Everyman and Brain Surgery.
Ooh.
So, Everyman was in this superhero game we were playing. We were using the Aberrant system, which is, you know, it has its funs, but it's mostly just broken as hell. And they had further.
I mean, it's called Aberrant, so.
Yeah,
what,
yeah.
Aberrant?
Yeah,
Aberrant. What's on the team?
Yeah, so we were playing Aberrant, but they had heavily hacked it because, like I said, it's not the most balanced system out there.
Totally agreed. Could not agree more. Please continue.
So we had gone through a couple characters, and I think I had just finished playing The Question. So, like, I don't know why they thought letting me play, like, an obsessive, paranoid, you know, the Question. If people don't know who The Question is, like Rorschach, basically. The Question is like a slightly more zenish Rorschach, and it was a conspiracy game, so he like just went nuts. And I was like, okay, well, for the next character I play, I'm gonna play like a Captain America, like Nick Fury mix. He like knows everybody, and he can just do everything. He's not great at anything, but he knows everybody, and he can do everything okay, or maybe slightly better than okay. And I mean everything. Every man could do everything up to and including brain surgery, which didn't become a problem until, like, I don't know, 10 sessions in with every man. And he had been doing, like, bomb diffusions and, like, negotiations and all this other shit. And one character just kept, like, just being just ridiculously reckless and endangering the party. And it was getting on my nerves. So he engineered a way to, like, sedate this guy and then he was going to install a cranial bomb and then just like keep it around and be like, hey dude, just don't. I have a button, just don't. If I tell you to don't, just don't. And like just otherwise let the guy go, but when he's going to yell profanities to alert the guards before we're ready for them and other similar acts, because he was just notorious for that shit, then I would pull out the button. But, you know, the GM was like, hey, this isn't cool. You can't be doing all that. And then, as it happened, Everman died that session. But we rolled it out. And then it came out like, yes, he would have succeeded at the brain surgery check. And then two sessions later, same character that he was going to do the brain surgery on got the whole party killed by, again, just, like, being a ridiculous piece of shit.
Whoops.
Yeah.
I assume this is where every man from the hypercore setting
came. That is where every woman came out of, yes. She was every man, and then I was like, I would rather if that was like a more empowering character. And so instead of making every man a white guy, we made every man a black lady.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, every woman a black lady, I should say, because she's not a man.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I always liked every man.
I have a second that reminded me. I have a much shorter answer for another great character played by a friend of mine, but I want to hear Savannah. I don't want to monopolize all of your time. Clearly, I want to take 90% of your time, but not.
Mine was that as Mike is familiar, I ran the Demolished Ones last weekend. I think we didn't have the stuff to run. I think we got our wires crossed. There are two different games that this group plays, and neither of the GMs had brought our stuff. So I just printed out character sheets. We ran the Demolished Ones in, like, 4 hours. Cake. I liked it because they leaned in really hard on things. Because, like, there was a character who was trying to roll a medicine roll and, you know, rolled phenomenally well. And so it's like, oh, well, I think I was a doctor. That's done. If you're not familiar, the Demolished Ones is basically the game is your character creation. You wake up with no memories and you attempt to figure out who you were. Trying not to spoil here. But the person who became a doctor was Dr. Sexy. and that just MD. Became their name. The person who figured that they were an arsonist, like, after coming to this conclusion, burnt down, like, every building that they went into. Thankfully, after they were leaving, but every building. Let's see. There was a circus strong woman who, you know, was apparently, like, a Black Widow type on the side, which is an interesting combination of the two.
I would read this novel. Like, this sounds fantastic.
I know, right? We had a 2.5 foot tall person. That was their distinguishing characteristics. Who had seen some sketchy shit. And, like, themselves was not sketchy somehow. But had just seen a lot of sketchy things and could, like, put their opinion in on them. And a sleazy psychologist. So, yeah.
Using dark psychology.
Yes, who just outed, like, it's sort of like on Clue, you know that thing that male psychologists aren't supposed to do with their lady patients? He did that.
Oh, that's rough. Yeah.
So, yes, he psychologied everything, they leaned way into what they thought they were, it was great.
Oh, that's delightful.
It is. That's,
just on the topic of Aberrant, okay, so we ran I had an Aberrant campaign that I got to play in very, very briefly that was, how best to phrase it, the GM had previously run this giant, beautiful campaign where he'd started all the characters as 1940s, like golden age, like super, like original Superman.
Yeah, four color comics.
The Nazis.
Yeah.
On and on. And that he'd then taken them session by session through the various ages. And then, like, slowly made the universe more and more grimdark, like, as they left the Silver Age and on and on. And that it was this, like, breathtakingly weird universe that, as of the 90s, he pulled... Has anyone here read the comic Wanted?
Mm-mm.
Okay, the original comic of Wanted is fantastic.
Yeah, I think I've seen the movie, not the comic.
Yeah, the movie's terrible. I should be very clear about that. The worst thing about the movie is because the movie's so bad, they will never do another like a good adaptation of the comic, which is fantastic. The entire idea, no spoilers, but it's in the first page of the comic. The idea is when you first start reading the universe, it appears to be our universe present day, and that you slowly learn, you learn relatively quickly, the main character slowly discovers that he used to live in this like four color action adventure, like awesome, like DC Comics universe. And that in the 80s, all the villains teamed up and erased everyone's memories of that.
Whoops.
And created a grim, dark universe where basically the bad guys actually can win all the time.
Mm.
And like you meet the Lex Luthor character, who is even like, that's the Morgan Freeman character in the movies. I mean, he's not very well done, although that was an inspired casting. He's not the same guy, sadly. But he has a big moment. He's talking to the main characters like, oh, I don't tell anyone, but I didn't have the heart to kill my nemesis. Everyone thinks I did, but I didn't. In fact, he's simply paralyzed in a wheelchair. Oh, I know what you're going to say. The universe's greatest mortal. He could actually stand up out of that chair anytime he'd like. He could punch the planet in half if he so desired, but he doesn't think he can. And it like pans over. It's obviously supposed to be Christopher Reeve in a wheelchair. And you're like, oh, this is super dark.
Oh.
And so it's got these versions of like the Joker and on. And basically the main character is supposed to be the son of Deathstroke.
Oh,
he's just the deadliest character, like the deadliest person in the universe. He had this kid nobody knew about who was born in the 80s. And that like as an adult, he is being folded into the dark society that secretly rules the universe. And that our GM had run this giant aberrant campaign to develop his own mythology. And that now in the modern era, he kind of tied it in with like X-Files, but that we were investigators of the secret history of the 20th century, which included superhumans, despite the fact that no one knew they existed, and that they'd basically been erased from history. The president of the United States was basically like somewhere between Red Skull and, you know, Lex Luthor. But that like basically their Superman XP, who had been a PC. Had gone evil and actually like worked kind of Dark Knight style from like the original Frank Miller Dark Knight comics. Yeah, and he was just like an enforcer for the U.S. government who just killed stuff, and that we were these like underground. We had superpowers. No one, like, it was illegal. Like, no one was supposed to know we had superpowers. And it was super dark and had a lot of millennial tension. Very like X-Files, Delta Green. Anyway, great campaign. We had one of my fellow PCs was a guy named Eric Mobbs. And that he was a replicator, like a multiple man.
Yeah.
And that what he would do is, because the matter that appeared when he made new versions of himself, that matter didn't go away. He would use the fact he could make infinite copies of himself to solve problems in really dark ways. Where it was like, oh, there's like auto turret guns down this next hallway. Make a copy of myself. We play rock, paper, scissors. The one who loses goes around the corner.
Eventually, it reminds me of the time that my group didn't have a rogue, so we used trap detection via summoned creatures.
Yeah.
You know, which was pretty horrifying because the person who chose to summon them like summoned ponies or something like adorable. Like it would have been horrific anyway, but it was like a pony, and it's like, just run down the hall, buddy. It's fine.
Good. It's good. Yeah. And of course, like summoned creatures go away. Like we've like filled pits with like the corpses of Eric Mobbs. We're like, I have to get over this pit. Like, all right, just like keep throwing Eric's in there until it fills up. And it was very strange, and like he kept asking for like a little private time with some of his guys before they went and died. We just got this really weird sexual vibe off of Eric, and
which I guess brings up the question about whether or not like would it be like sex or masturbation at that
right? And is it just one person really appreciating themselves like? he was just a dark character, and he had actually invested a bunch of his points into a blast powered Michael. Know what I'm talking about? The blast works.
Yeah.
And he dipped it all the way back, so it was only by touch.
He just like multiply himself and vault somebody.
Well, what he could do is he could give someone Siamese cancer, where he would give them a bad version of his power inside their own body.
Huh.
And he just, like, I mean, like, he couldn't use it. Like, it was only lethal was the big problem. Like, it wasn't a good knockout thing, and it didn't really work on supers, and it only worked with, like, bare skin-to-skin contact. Like, you couldn't, like, run up and, like, hit somebody, like, in their, like, bulletproof chest plate. Like, it had to be skin-to-skin, but the first time he, like, slapped a dude in the face, and, like, that dude's own fingers came out of the guy's mouth as we, like, find, like, another skull of the same guy inside, and and he just went, wow, Eric, you're a terrible person with terrible powers.
Yep. Good job, Eric.
Yeah, I hate being on a team with you.
I don't even know this player.
Yeah, it was just really wonderful. We were like, hey, can the problem be solved by throwing an infinite, like, mountain of corpses at a problem? If so, Eric's your guy.
It takes the whole hide behind the pile of dead bards strategy to a whole new level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those were his only ability. Like, other than that, like, no ability. I think he could ride a bike. I think he'd, like, ride a bike pretty good.
That's a skill?
Yeah, well, because you could, like, replicate bikes. Where you're like, oh, I can't replicate a car, but if I have a bike, I can send 50 Eric Mobses on bikes. Like, we don't have guns or anything. We can't, like, shoot you off the bikes, but we will, like, ramp. You know, I want my $2! he, like, ramped it. Like, oh, man, this guy was killed when 50 dudes ran him over on bikes.
Yeah, you could do...
It looks like Mob was up his old trick.
Ridiculous cause of
death. Remember the first time we tried to do Abern, it was like, the guy's like, I'm going to be Wolverine, and the other guy's like, I'm going to be Colossus, and I was like, I'm going to be a businessman that summons, I don't know, gigantic purple carp, and I poured all my money and powers into this ability, so the carp is the size of a battleship, and as strong as Superman, and what are we doing?
A carp?
Yeah, it was a giant psychic carp that...
I mean,
he could
make
other things, but I figured if it could be the size of a battleship and super strong, then, like, it might as well be a carp. Like, yeah.
Oh, okay. What else could be that
size? Exactly. That's what I thought. I was like, well, are we going to make it a tank? No, that's ridiculous. A carp.
No, what? No, there we go. All
right. So normally we try to keep some kind of format, but we've gone off the rails today.
I blame myself as much as anything else.
Fair.
The police are out in force tonight here in town. I'm going to close that so you can't hear the police quite as well.
All
right. Please continue, Mike.
Favorite working projects. Are you working on anything right now? Or are you just?
I'm working on a ton of stuff right now. The biggest one that I'm psyched for people to see that I can talk about is Bloodlines of Black Magic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's going to be a good time.
Yeah, that is that. How about to phrase it? That thing is so long in the making, it feels really weird to me to be like, oh, right, I was at
a con a year and like a month ago, and we were talking about this.
Yeah, like I was at a convention and bumped into Jason Sonia, who is not, like, basically now my neighbor. I mean, he lives like an hour and a half from my house. And yeah, we were just happened to be at a convention, and we got to drinking and talking kind of really weird, random, like, argument, because that's how Jay and I communicate. It's like loudly agreeing.
That is how Jason communicates with most people, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. And he's a great publisher for that reason. And of course, we've known each other since, like, before he... Like, we met it at Gen Con. He, like, brought me, like, the first rune thing. He was like, I'm thinking about becoming a publisher. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, that's neat. Let's have a beer. And, but yeah, so we've known each other a hot minute, and we just got to arguing and, like, loudly agreeing with each other till, like, 3 a.m, just standing out and, like, you know, chain smoking. And, yeah, it has been a huge, like, passion project for him and certainly for me, but it's, like, to, like, seeing someone like Tim Hitchcock send me notes on my writing is so bizarre. We just kind of go, hey, Tim, like, this is amazing. Like, I can't believe you're taking, like, my silly thing that I wrote, like, so seriously, to say nothing of, like, something I feel like I've been working on forever. Like,
yeah.
It's just been, like...
Folks who don't know, Bloodlines of Black Magic is like a Buffy-esque reinterpretation of the Pathfinder role-playing game for like, mid-level to low-level play, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. The big push for it is that it's the first 7 levels of play, and then you stop leveling. Now, your character continues to advance, and the story can continue to advance. Every time you would achieve your 8th level, you instead get, like, a feat. And that there is a... I mean, and you can draw a sharp distinction between, like, here is a 7th level character plus 1 feet and a 7-level character plus 15 feet. And you need to really open up your feats beyond that to be like, well, what about higher level class abilities? You're gonna go, oh, well, some of those can be selected as feats. Because, I mean, it's easy to say it's difficult to execute properly. And that we then chose to do only 7 classes, because you kind of go, well, I mean, there's a lot of classes in Pathfinder, and that it's urban fantasy is kind of that idea. So it's got 1 foot in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's going to have 1 foot in Harry Potter, and a lot of us, I mean, Jay's a big fan of, for example, like Preacher, or like American Gods, and kind of these weirder urban fantasy stories, and we lean very heavily on the occult classes. So you've got your mesmerist, you've got your spiritualist, and then you've got brawler, which I thought was a perfect fit for this, like for this kind of setting. And it's just been really neat to build a universe and kind of go, okay, well, we're not including clerics, we're not including wizards, so what are we including? And like, and building a universe out of that. And once we decided like 7 was kind of our number, the number we keep coming back to, somebody would be like, okay, well, I want to have this like secret bloodline that rules the universe. And then I want to have like this group of like archangels. I'm like, okay, awesome. 7 bloodlines and 7 archangels, can do. Like, let's make that happen. And you could go, oh, well, I didn't necessarily say 7. I'm like, no, if there's 2 of anything, there's got to be 7. There's got to be 0 or 7. Like, it's kind of like that design works. And just getting weirder and weirder. We did the Kickstarter for it. We had really hoped to have the book out, I want to say, October. I think we were really aiming for that Halloween release date. And basically, I mean, real life happens. And thank God people understand that. I believe we should have it out this spring, at least to backers. And it should be big and beautiful and hardcover. And because at one point I mentioned, I'm like, oh, you know who'd be great for this is Matt Bannick. My best friend since like 3rd grade. I was, you know, I'm the best man at his wedding, godfather to his kid. Like, I will always suggest Bannick be involved in anything. And to have Jason, you'd be like, yeah, great idea. Bring him on board. And I was like, Bannick worked with Justin Sluder on a bunch of stuff for like Wright Publishing, all the Faces of the Tarnished Sook. And have Jason, you'd be like, yeah, fuck, great. That's great. Awesome. Bring him in. Have him do some NPCs. And you go like, yeah, this project is slowly like getting larger and larger and larger. And I feel like I look away for a week and I look back and I'm like, Tim, Hitchcock, what did you do? Like, what have you added to my universe?
That seems like a reasonable question to just sort of ask Tim in general, frankly.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Don't leave him alone in a room if you are not willing to sort of take a deep breath before.
I don't know when we're going to get to it, but we've got all this stuff mapped out for a Starfinder adventure path, and I'm supposed to write a surrealist planet with him. And, like, I can't imagine, like, a better project for Tim. Like, yeah, I'm excited for it. I gotta fucking read the Starfinder book. God damn it.
I mean, we're like, what, halfway through? It's fine.
Yeah.
It'd be fun. I did a few years back a kind of goofy thing for my Tumblr. I was gonna say that might be the other place if people...
Oh, yeah. To loop back, get that crazy Tumblr.
How would people know you? I have a Tumblr that is really my outlet for the various weird stuff that pops in my head. Because, I mean, end of the day, like, if I get 15 minutes every 2-3 days to write, I'm like, that's the best thing that's ever happened to me. Like, I having a 3-year-old kid, having a, you know, 8-month-old kid, and, you know, I'm the sole breadwinner in the family. Kate's got the thyroid cancer. And I mean, it's just been punishing what she's been through. And not to get personal or too dark, but, I mean, she has been through the ringer. And, you know, so my time is very... very slim, but you know, if I can get 15 minutes every 2-3 days to just sit down, I'll just hammer stuff out because Tumblr's a perfect venue for that. Where I kind of go, dude, Jay, I cannot write Bloodlines of Black Magic on my own. If I could, I would. I can't. So I'm going to pass this to you. And if you are feeling saucy enough to pass it to Tim Hitchcock, do so. What I can do is just generate weird new content and throw it on my Tumblr. One of the things I did for my Tumblr, kind of for funsies a while ago, was a prestige class for the secret royalty from my novel, The Hole Behind Midnight. And just, I kind of borrowed elements from like the Task Shaper, which I think is a great class for publishing, the Time Thief. And, you know, it basically just kind of hammered like kind of my beautiful, precious little version of it out and threw it online. And then weirdly, like Owen Stevens was like, oh, hey, let me, like, I'll do an editing pass on that. I think Ray Valise like helped with an editing pass. It was so weird to bump into Tim Hitchcock. He was like, "Dude, I love your novel." I'm like, "Oh, what? Oh, thank you." He's like, "Also, why are all the powers so lame for your thing you built?"
Oh,
that sounds like Tim.
What do you mean? He's like, "You don't have a single one where you can karate chop a guy so hard that his gender changes." Like, what? He's like, "That just seems like the sort of thing you would have as a member of the secret royalty. Like, where's the gonzo action?" And I was like, being publicly shamed by Tim Hitchcock for like not making it weird enough. I was like, "Oh God, sorry."
That sounds about right. Which reminds me, Boomer, I've been trying to get you in one spot forever. I have to know, what are you the king of?
Oh my goodness, I am in fact the king of Macomb. It was, and that was never more obvious to me. I have not been back to that town in several years. We visited real recently, kind of late Christmas, after it was after New Year's earlier this month. We realized that my little sister had not seen my son since before he could crawl.
Oh, geez.
Like, last time my little sister had seen him, he could get up on two arms, but he couldn't actually, like, move forward. And she had never met her only niece, who is now like 8 months old, like can crawl, can kind of talk, and definitely has opinions. And I was like, my little sister happened to be, she's been living in Switzerland. And I was like, yeah, she's going to be back in town. She's going to see the parents. I haven't seen them in a hot minute. But it was very strange for Kate to walk around town and be like, "Oh my God, does everyone know you? We can't go anywhere. And we can't go anywhere. Like we walk from the car into the coffee shop, and three different people stop you to say hi. I'm like, yeah, that's because I lived in this town, a town of like 20,000 people, 10,000 people during the school year. I lived there from 1990 till like 2013. I know everybody. Like, yeah, that used to be my go-to. It's like, "Oh, King of Macomb," and then having visited relatively recently, no, that is definitely,
reaffirmations.
Yeah, the reaffirmation. Kate was like, "I, this is insane."
Abdicated the throne.
I'm a prince in exile.
Ah, there we go. The next thing out of his mouth was what he was the king of, so he hasn't given it up in that respect. So.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, no, I was actually talking to, weirdly enough, talking to my dad about the whole Behind Midnight this morning. And I'm like, yeah, I've always been here. I get to talk to Boomer today. Oh, also I scared the bird.
Oh, that might have been me. I'm quite scary. I will admit to that. But, oh, that delights me. Has your father read this book?
He has not, but as soon as I can get my books unpacked from my last of a billion moves, he's going sure.
Totally understood. I will be fascinated to hear his thoughts.
Fair enough.
Like, deeply fascinated. I will write him, if he reads it and does not like it, I will write him a handwritten apology. You give him that guarantee.
Okay.
Tell
I like
him
it.
Not to tell anyone
that
he doesn't like it.
So the handwritten apology is like hush money?
Basically. Like, I can't offer the man much, but I can be like, "Dear sir, thank you for thanks for your time and energy. Please give this to an enemy. Ruin his day, and perhaps, you know, just pass it forward, but in hate."
Ah, well, there we go. I mean, he better not pass it anywhere. It's my copy.
Oh, okay. Well, I respect that. If he does happen to like it, I have this. I'm sure you know. I have my recurring fantasy that I wake up like that movie Bright on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
The TV show Magicians, which is also on Netflix. Like, I have this recurring fantasy that I get the email of, like, "Dear Mr. Boomer, Netflix has optioned the whole Behind Midnight to be adapted. Where would you like, we're still writing zeros on the check. Where would you like us to send it?" And there was a time I dreamed of many other things. That is really my ultimate dorm room fantasy now.
Elise asked me, or at some point I wanted to do something, and I looked into it, and like, you need to have, they only do contact through agents.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Because I saw South Park episode where they basically just had like a call center, and you could call, and Netflix would pick up the phone and say, "You're greenlit!" And like, the kids went to call, but they had been recently, yeah. Yeah, so I went to check, and I was like, if I had an agent.
That's always possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that is the, because I'll tell you, man, I'm sure that's not how George R. R. Martin did it. I'm sure it wasn't a surprise to him. They're like, ring, ring, hello, yes, HBO. Yeah, no, I don't want to renew my subscription. Oh, you're doing the show. Ah, fantastic, awesome. Yeah, but it's George R. Second R. Martin. Yeah, a lot of people leave off the second R. Thanks. Yeah. No, you too. Bye. Like, that's not how it happens. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, still, hey, my man can dream, right?
We'll see.
That's fair.
Hypercore is my goal. I think Hypercore is going to get there someday, but we'll
do it.
All right.
I believe in you.
What was I going to talk about? I was going to talk about my blog. I've been doing
talk about it.
A hack of D&D 5e for Warhammer 40K, and tomorrow is the last of the 20 posts, which I'm excited about. Because I have a document, and I know how much I've written for it, and I was like, you have to stop, because this is, when you hit 30,000 words on a project that you're not, like, making any money on, you probably need to just, like, focus on projects.
The Mylar effect. Everybody, yeah. The Mylar effect.
Yeah. But,
well, you're not allowed, it's not that you're not making money on it, it's that you're not allowed to make money
yeah.
on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's because you are an honorable man, but... No, I mean, point taken. You are allowed to...
I could just,
to...
like, reskin it. They're not Space Marine, they're Space Placebos. You're fighting the forces of Naos. Mama Kurgle. Yeah.
No. See, I think you should do, like, an April Fool's thing with the Agents of Naos.
Maybe.
Naos Placebos.
At least as okay. a free PDF.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, because you're allowed to collect all of it, and, like, you're allowed to print it at cost for yourself and give it away. I mean, that's like true. Making money in so many ways.
I suppose. I don't know. Yeah. I was going to do, like, a Primark, and or two Primarks as the final post, and then I was like, I don't want people to have Primark stat blocks. So
instead, no. There's some things you should not put stat blocks.
I forgot. Somebody sent me a fucking character sheet. Yeah, last week the dude emailed me and was like, hey, we're starting our D&D 5e Warhammer game soon. I made character sheets for everybody, and I was like, oh my fucking god! So I took it, and then I, like, spruced it up a little bit with, like, you know, Warhammer imagery, because I know that I can't get sued over it because I'm not having any money on it. So, right. Yeah, there's, like, a form-fillable PDF, and then, like, a sheet for printing if you have, like, a work printer. And then tomorrow's post, there's no stats, it's just a link to the Google document that has everything in it.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty stoked.
Now, to loop off for a second, because I want to be clear, because I do try to repost that, like, anytime I see your 5e 40k material, I do try to repost it to share. And the problem is, because I'm not a 5e player. I'm not. I ran one 5e game in Milwaukee for, like, it was an event where they're like,
very interesting.
Vault of the Dracula. And it was a ton of fun. I had a great time doing it. I had some awesome players. But I had the table of newbie players. I was the newbie 5e GM. I'm like, I know the rules, kind of. I've played one or two pickup sessions at conventions. Brian Berg was kind enough to run some shit for me. But, like, end of the day, I'm not trying to write for 5e. I'm not trying to run 5e. I'm not really trying to play 5e. So, I mean, up to a point, a lot of it kind of washes over my head. But I love the idea. I mean, like... If all 5e can do is bring more people to the hobby.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's all it can do. Like, that's like worst case scenario. Like, oh, well, it brought more people to the hobby.
So 5e, there's some other stuff they're doing that is not great that we talk about at length, because the DM's Guild is like a pit of shit. Not the content in it's shit, but, like, it's a giant pit of poop that in order to climb out of, you just fall deeper in.
That sounds about it.
Yeah,
that's not good at all.
5e itself and, like, all the promotion and marketing for 5e and the resurgence of the brand are all good. What they're doing to the like tertiary marketplace around RPGs is bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's we had a funny moment. I was about to say, it's kind of news to me. We had a moment the other day. I was at work and I was talking about. Have you seen Baby Driver?
Yeah.
Anybody here? I loved Baby Driver. It was one night specifically where I had to work in the morning and Kate had to go for, like, a biopsy or something, like something for the thyroid, for the cancer. And she had to, like, drive to Milwaukee. And so the kids were spending the night with grandma And so she's like, so I don't have the kids. I didn't have to like drop them off, but I had like had to work in the morning. And Kate really specifically was like, honey, I want you to go to the movies. Like, we never get to go to the movies. I know you. You will sit at the house. You will try to work. And you will fail to work because you're going to be freaking out about me and like, la, la, la. Just with my, like, not my blessing, with my command. Go to the movies and see something. I was like, okay, honey, you got it. And so I go and I see Baby Driver. Loved it. It's everything I needed it to be. It was perfect, beautiful. But I was talking to about the film with like a bunch of my coworkers who like tend to be younger people, as you know, college kids, 20 somethings, a couple of high schoolers. And I was like, oh man, Baby Driver's so good. Oh man, it was so great. Like, oh, you guys should see it. And I was like, oh, you know, it's got this, and it's got this, and it's got this. I'm like, oh, it's got Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey's great. Like, he's this great villain. Like, I love him. And I was like, and it was a couple of like younger people who were like, really? You're like really into Kevin Spacey? I was like, oh yeah, he's awesome. I loved him in everything. Like, he's the best. Like, no one's as good as Kevin Spacey, and he's like the best villain. And I'm like, really? That's cool, old man. Like, I'm gonna go. Gotta go clean some tables. Oh. And it wasn't. It was like 3 weeks later. I was like, oh, Kevin Spacey got in trouble for being a jerky perv.
Yeah, I noticed.
I'm so out of the loop. Like, I don't know anything. I said something about Bright the other day, and like, I'd been ranting about Bright and how much I loved it for like 3 weeks, and somebody was like, oh, too bad Max Landis is a piece of crap. Yeah. I was like, he's a what now? I don't know about any of this. I don't, what? Was this in a blog post? Because I don't read blogs. Like, I don't have time. I'm sorry. Like, I need my sound bites real small and literally shot into the side of my head with a dart gun.
I'm surprised that it's, like, such a thing, because I went to school for film studies, and, like, you find out, like, this none of this is news to me. Like, this was just assumed fucking modus operandi of how things worked.
All I was going to say is, because if those things are surprising me, like, those are, like, front page news, various places, 5E, like, if there's bad behavior, I know nothing about it.
Oh, yeah, so no. It's more they're just terrified of another Paizo happening, and so they're going out of every, yeah, that's
okay. All it is.
People, like, that's making governance. Products and stuff is great, and the designers, it's all, there's some stuff going on where it's, like, the production schedule was really open right around Starfinder, they didn't have any releases. So, like, I think the designers are aware of what Hasbro's trying to push, and, like, they just try to mitigate the damage as much as possible. But, yeah. And DM's Guild has... The model has profligated. The big problem is that you give up all your ownership rights, and they take a bigger cut. And, like, once you submit it there, you can't submit it anywhere or take it off. So, like, you lose ownership of the property, essentially. And, now they're doing, and that lets you like write it as if it's in the Forgotten Realms and mention Elminster and Drizzt stuff. And now, Worlds of Darkness is doing it. Monte Cook Games has a version. Ian Publishing has one too for what's old is new RPG. So yeah,
I didn't realize it was that widespread.
Yeah, that's what's got me worried about it. it's not a big deal for the other ones because they can just drop it, right? Like, but D&D has the SRD, and that forces them to always have some kind of third party around, unless they change all the game terminology, because that's the only part that you can copyright.
Right.
So, Finding itself is good, and what it's doing for the industry on the whole is good. It's just not good from the side of publication.
Right.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Also, as a time check, we are 10 till 6.
So, do. Favorite new projects in R&Rs. I got one from Michael McCarthy, the role-playing game dictionary. He showed this to me and was like, can you help me with this? And I was like, yeah. And then a month later, I was like, yeah. And then I was like, no, dude, I don't have time. I'm so behind on all the other shit. But it is a cool idea. It is a cool idea. It's meant for any RPG. So if you have no idea what you're doing and you're like introducing your spouse or child or something, you can pick it up for free. Pay what you want.
That's awesome.
Give them like it's like just a big glossary of like, what does it normally mean when they say armor class or defense or constitution or this or that?
That's so cool.
There we go.
Yeah. His whole thing is making stuff that brings clarity to the games and the rules. And it's mostly Pathfinder, but this one is all systems. So
that's beautiful, man. Is this available? I can just go get this thing now?
Yes. I put it in the Twitch window, but I can message it in here too.
Yeah, oh, dude, that's awesome. You just made my day, man.
Da, da, da.
And mine is an adventure scenario called The Show Must Go On. And it just seems like a very charming idea.
It looks cute.
Basically, there's this group famous for their stage act, but backstage, they've basically made themselves completely unwanted. Like, they've turned more than one venue to slag, apparently, and no respectable passenger line is going to take them anywhere. And so, you know, your job as a group is to escort them from their current gig and deliver them alive to their next gig. And I don't know, it just seems like a very wacky time, and I enjoy that.
That's really delightful. What is the system setting?
Fate.
Fate, okay.
It makes me think of, do you guys ever see, I think it's called Dead Leaves, it's an anime, and it's Mm-mm. these two weirdo criminals in prison. One of them has a TV for a head.
Okay.
This feels like, it's awesome, by the way. If you haven't seen Dead Leaves, it's great. Check it out. But yeah, this feels like Dead Leaves. This would be right in fitting for it. That's cool. I don't play enough Fate. I need to play more Fate. I only did the one Demolished games with you. That was the only one.
Really, that was mostly Fate adjacent.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm what you would call a long distance Fate connoisseur. Like, I've long admired Fate from a distance, and like, I've never actually gotten a chance to sit down and play with the thing.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. All right.
The topic is awesome stuff that I had nothing to do with.
You do not profit from, yeah.
Oh, you done asked me the right question. I just picked up Book of the Damned, and I mentioned it earlier, like kind of as an aside, like, oh, I didn't work on it. But I want to be very clear. I did not work on it, and that thing is amazing. Like, the Pathfinder, it's Book of the Damned. I could not be more pleased. That thing drips with genius. Like, every time, like, it's my... Okay, like, not to get too personal, but like, when I get up to like run to the restroom in the middle of the night, and I'm like, well, I can't like take my phone with me. My phone's plugged in.
Yeah.
Right. I need my phone to be right here because the alarm's gonna go off. That's how I'm gonna wake up in the morning. Shucks, better take Book of the Damned. And like every time I just like flip it open to a completely random page, I'm like, oh, I haven't read this one before. Like, I've never even heard of this like random demon lord or devil magistrate. Every time, like, I'm halfway through the page, I'm like, yeah, this is an entire campaign.
I'm gonna play this dude on the cover of the next game I play. This old guy with the staff. I'm gonna play that as my next PC. That guy's dope.
Oh, is it Charon?
Charon, is that his name?
Charon? The boatman?
No. Oh, Karen. Oh, is that meant to be Karen? That's okay, so we're looking at the River Styx? Okay. Okay, yeah, that's a... They're called Tana Daemons, but yeah, Karen is the name of the one that's popular.
Though my brain really wants to see one called Charon.
Charon. Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce
it. No, just Charon.
Just Charon.
Like, the suburban housewife name, Charon.
Get on the boat, or don't get on the boat. We're leaving in 30 seconds. It's up to you.
Yup. Like, don't make me turn this boat around, because I will do it, mister.
Ozzy Osbourne drunkenly, like, Charon!
Yep.
Yeah, Charon.
Yup.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
But you can't really, I'm sure it would be difficult to infer any sort of mortal concept of gender on them, because they're like, you know, creepy skeleton-y people. But yeah, no, their name is Charon. I'm going to write that now.
No, we're still going to do...
I make notes about this.
So I just finished the last read-through for the Book of Exalted Darkness, and I wanted to include Hell. We were going to do... Well, we were going to do Dante's Inferno, right? We're going to do the whole thing. But it's too big already, and it would have taken like another 2 months to write it all. We can come back to it, though.
So what now?
I just finished the evil book we're working on for 5e, but we didn't have enough room or space to do like all the hells, so we just like kept it vague.
Well, like Hellcrashers was like the big weird project I did.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Back. Yeah.
Yeah, and every once in a while I'll still get like bizarre little Hellcrashers like snippets that'll pop into my head. I'm like, ooh, I need to like write that down. I'm still very proud of it. It's tough because I can't show that to like Kate, for example, or like Kate's family, because it was just an exercise in like the most twisted darkness. And like, I even feel weird putting it on my Tumblr, just because, you know, it, in theory, everything that I do for Pathfinder, for Paizo, like, or like, is even like adjacent, is all ages, And you just go, no, Hellcrushers was never meant to be all ages. It was never. It was always supposed to be an exploration of humanity's worst version of darkness. And but it was a neat moment, I was just going to say, for Bloodlines of Black Magic, because at one point, Jay Sonya was like, oh, like, there do need to be hells. I was like, oh, you done come to the right place, fella. I'm like, watching him be like, yeah, but it's still Pathfinder. Like, you need to cut this to the bone. Like, you can keep this sentence from the first paragraph and these two sentences from the third paragraph, and then you are done. You write the word end sidebar. Yeah. I was like, all right, yeah, end sidebar is probably, that's probably going to be my friend right there.
Exercise in restraint.
This is the last 5e campaign sitting, and we're getting all the evil out now, because, like, I don't want to do any more 5e stuff because I don't like what they're doing, and I want to go back to Pathfinder, but, like, sure, you're not going to let me make a Cloak of Babies in Pathfinder. And I want a Cloak of Babies! And you
Did
know
you
what?
Stab the
I'm going to have my fucking Cloak
Please
of Babies.
Please tell me you stab the Cloak of Babies.
Yeah, you can stab it. It's a mewling flesh.
No. Stat. Did you stat it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a yeah. You can, when you get critically hit, it well, if it's not okay, if it's like animal babies, then it activates on a critical hit. But if you make it out of like elf babies, you can activate it all the time.
There we go.
Yeah, yeah. But
it reminds me. Yeah. It reminds me of a class. I don't remember. It was 3.0 or 3.5 class, and it was one where you specifically had to kill like 30 good aligned members of your own race in order to like
Oh, you still there?
I'm here.
We lost Savannah.
That whatever she was about to say was so awful.
I think she might have been talking about the Paragon class, because it was like you're the last one of your kind or something.
And so I was about to just ask, like, was this from the Book of Vile Darkness?
Yeah, I think it probably was. And that was one of the problems, too, because I was just going to update all the Book of Vile Darkness, but that shit's not OGL.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, we had to come up with evil out of the aether.
I was delighted the first time I got to, like, actually sit down, like to meet James Jacobs and just be like, I want to shake your hand, because there was some excellent... I remember the was it Dragon Magazine or Dungeon Magazine that came out around. Like,
all right, so that happened.
So you have to kill like 20 or 30 members of your own race, and then.
And then what?
But like good aligned members of your own race.
Oh, okay.
And I was wondering what would happen if a drow tried to do that. Because, like, logically, I know that they'd probably be like, well, other elves count, whatever. But no, like, what if it's really restrictive? What if you had to find 20 good-lying drow? And, like, they're all going to be, like, freaking dritzed because, you know...
It would just be faster to, like, steal some drow orphans and then raise them to be good and then kill them, like, 10 years later.
That is the longest game. Like, how old do they have to be before you can determine whether or not they're good or not? Like... When does morality set in on a drow timeline?
6. I'd say about age 6. That's where I would put
it. 4 drow, is that like 100?
Yeah, these are elves, man. Elves live a long time.
Yeah, I wonder how long an elven baby is an elven baby.
That just seems like the worst.
The
like,
terrible 20s.
You can kind of relate to this. Like, you have a kid in diapers for, like, 100 years.
Oh, yeah.
That's why elves care so much about other elves. It's like, you don't understand. That thing shat in diapers for 2 decades. Somebody had to deal with that. Absolutely. Resurrect him now.
Yeah. I remember, it's kind of weird. You're only 40. Yeah, my cousin was still in diapers when he was 40. That's, like, it's cool. Here's what I'll say. It weirds me out. I was doing a thing with Dampier the other day, because I love Dampier. Like, I know they're probably... I mean, they like Drizzt, are probably a little overdone. Like, oh, he's a half vampire, you know. But I don't know. I love him. And, but the way they are supposed to age, like, literally, if one had been born, like, before Zeppelins were invented, that... In the like our universe, that person would still be a kid by Dampier standards.
Like, it's why I never quite got the, what were they called, the Forsaken or the Sorrowful, something in the Pathfinder saying like elves who grew up around humans.
Oh, Forsaken elves, yeah.
Yeah, like awful, 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 awful.
Be weird.
Like, you would have to be raised by generations of people.
Yeah, that's really... Okay, did you ever read the Stephen Bruce, the Bruce books, Jerig?
No, I haven't, no. Or wait, no. Yes, I have. Yes, I have. Because he's like... they're like the other sort of elf stand-in species, but they've merged with Amel DNA, and it's like the dragon clan and the hawk clan. And
that's them. That's exactly them. That's exactly them. Yeah. I love the Taltush novels. It's Vlad Taltush, who's like a human. He's an Easterner, and then he lives amongst Dragaerans, which are the kind of the elf XBs. And they're super wonderful. But like, there's a throwaway line from one of the books, because he has his buddy, Morilin, who is... an elf, he's a Dragaeran, who's like a super wizard. I mean, he's just super powerful. I mean, he's just by D&D standards, you're like a 30th level character. You know, oh, he's got his 20 levels of wizard. He's also like minimum a 10th level fighter, and he's got this, that, and the other thing. And that, like, he and Vlad are really like, they're good buddies, even though, you know, Vlad would be like maybe a 6th to 12th level like human rogue. That they're good buddies because Morlin like has studied witchcraft, which is like the Easterner. It's like the slow, methodical version of spellcasting in the universe. And like the fast, hard, quick sorcery, which can like blow buildings in half, whereas witchcraft is like minor fiddly details. And they're like, oh, okay, so he and Morlin are buddies. They like to hang out and talk about witchcraft and on and on. But they just completely randomly note at one point, oh, Morlin actually, like, the reason he's into Easterner-style witchcraft is because he grew up in the East and thought he was a human when he was a kid.
Oops.
Right, oops. And Vlad just kind of has this moment like, wait, how does that work? Like, and it's never explained. We're like, wait a minute. The shortest Dragaeran we've ever met can't pass for human. The tallest human can't pass for Dragaeran. The two species look almost nothing alike, and they age at ridiculously different speeds. What an awkward childhood this guy must have had.
He must have been mistaken for a very malformed baby.
Yeah, like, it's just, I mean, they've never, I mean, every once in a while, I'm like laying in bed at night, I'll be like, how weird would it be to get to like the age of like 120 and be like, everyone I know, like, growing up, is dead of old age now. And I'm still barely a teenager. Something makes me think...
It's kind of like, like the idea that humans are elves to dogs.
Yeah, that, like, I think my great-great-grandparents weren't telling the entire truth about me when they raised me. They have a secret from me now that I'm 8.5 feet tall. I'm gonna have to ask one of my great great grandnephews if there's anything going on here. Anyway, that's my funny story.
Alright.
Do you have anything else on the agenda?
We do. Pathfinder, Starfinder, news and speculation.
Do we want to get into that at 6:04?
Yeah. All right. Let me see. We can talk about that later. I am excited to talk about though, because he's from DAF, dog. One of us made it. But next week, we'll talk about 5e next week. Other RPG news, there's an open call right now for Eclipse Phase, so if you are a designer watching the show, and you probably are, because that's kind of what the show is for, check it out. They're paying like 3.5-ish, 2 more cents a word for some very specific samples. Might be your thing if you like Eclipse Phase. Yeah. Gamma. Oh, this is interesting. So, WotC announced last week, I think it was, that they're going to force game stores to do background checks on people running events. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's what's going down. And then a lot of people were like, that's crazy. We don't want background information going through the hands of game store employees. So, I don't know, my issue is that, like, that just kind of shoulders all the labor and problems onto the game store owners, which are already the most beleaguered part of that chain right there. So, Gamma... Oh. What are you going to say? No? Okay.
I have nothing to say. That's just weird. That's been really weird to me.
Yeah, no, it's really weird. And the Game Manufacturers Association is trying to collectively gather together to group up game stores to do background checks through one or two services all at once and, like, regulate it.
So hopefully they're not like totally left out in the cold.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
And I mean, I realize that this is happening for a reason. Like, I don't know what the reason is, but if the moment is, well, now we have to go do a background check. You mean, like, as the guy sitting at the end of the bar who has not been paying attention, like, had to look at it like, oh, something bad must have happened. Everybody's got to start doing background checks now. Yeah.
And, like, game store owners need that, and they're heavily invested in fucking Magic tournaments, man. Like, I don't think we'd see half as many game stores today if there weren't Magic tournaments.
Yeah, Friday Night Magic, man. I mean, people who don't play Magic know about Friday Night. People who don't game know about Friday Night.
Yeah. So, we'll see how that all shakes out. Hopefully that helps. Other media of interest, they're making another Clue, although it's not tied to the original Clue script. It's its own thing. But,
I mean, that's probably for the best, but I'm still suspicious.
Yeah, dude, the Tim Curry Clue is a pretty iconic movie. I don't know.
Yeah, that's an amazing film. I saw something about this, like, somebody even made the comment of, like, oh, because it was such a
That's what it's gonna come down to, is casting. That's what I'm thinking of. I'm like, who would I put in those roles? And it's like, well, I know Ryan Reynolds is in there somewhere, and I'm thinking, like, who the fuck would I make Ryan Reynolds? We'll see.
Let it be noted on the record.
I'll definitely check it out, but I don't know. We'll see.
I can't promise I'll see it. I saw that new Jumanji. That was
fantastic. It was better than I thought it was going to be, yeah. That was better than I thought.
Yeah, I haven't seen the new Star Wars. That should be very good. But I have seen that Jumanji.
I don't know. The new Star Wars. If you haven't seen it, so we don't need to talk about it. I don't know. I'm burned out on Star Wars. I gave you my heart and you broke it. So we watch about Kickstarters and we talk about them every week. We got two to talk about this week. One is On the Shoulders of Heroes Reborn, which is Viking stuff for 5e and 3.5. Check it out if you want some Viking stuff. And then what you got, Savannah? Is this yours or is that...
I know I put a Kickstarter on there, but my computer's in the middle of rebooting and I'm on my phone.
Nightcrawl, the film noir tabletop role-playing game?
Yes, something was definitely compelling about it. How many days does it have left? Can I talk about next week?
It ends in 15 hours. But they did fund. They must have funded in the past week. Looks cool. If you want to play a Dick Tracy game, I think this is it.
Cool. Check out the link.
Yeah. Alright. And now we can just... We've just been kind of talking about whatever. So 5e here. Okay, so what gets me about 5e is I think I got spoiled by Pathfinder. Because it's really easy to design anything for Pathfinder. There's rules in place. The monster creation system is insane. And then you get to 5e, and it's all this reductionist stuff that is just unbelievably frustrating to design around. I don't know. What are your thoughts on 5e?
I mean, I've only played with a very, very little amount. It was for working exactly. Everyone had a great time. It was great. But I sat down and every time I played, I had a good time. I could entertain myself. I mean, you give me a box of Chex Mix, and we're give me a Kit Kat bar, and I'll sit there and tell myself a story about what's going on. Getting to run the thing for people, it was neat to be able to hand out these sheets and kind of go, hey, everybody's here to have a good time. This is, here's a chaotic with half-orc paladin, la 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 la. We're just going to talk to you about that. I specifically did with a group of like scoundrels and ninja girls, and it was neat to me to be able to put together a set of six pre-gen
PCs that come off the website.
That it's a much better system for introducing people to roleplay.
Yeah, that's what I like. There was the neat moment where somebody's like, "Oh, I have a magic sword." I'm like, "Yeah, you guys are all such fun. You should have magic items." And then I glance at the sheets. I'm like, "Oh, crap! Like nobody has magic items." They're like, "Oh yeah, yeah." Like, the rule. If you want, oh yeah, that's like much. That's like a plus one sword is much more. Like, oh, that's neat because I just.
Yeah, I'm playing a side game where we're 9th level and we have plus one weapons.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, because
which would be completely unheard of in a Pathfinder game.
Oh yeah, and I was like, because this Brock that you're expected to face, just has a little note. He takes half damage from everything except magic weapons. Like, and that's a rule that has not been around since I remember playing a lot of Second Edition. I played a ton of Planescape back in 93 when I was 13. That made sense to me. I'm like, oh, it takes half damage from not magic weapons. I was like, that's not a Pathfinder, that's a third edition thing. Half damage from like weapons? Really? But no, there's damage reduction.
Yeah, it makes the ability much better, because I was looking through warlock options, and one of the things is like, oh, you can choose to make yourself resistant to slashing damage, but this is negated by magic weapons. And I'm like, well, what is the point then? But that's the point.
Yeah, and then you're like, well, what do you mean, like, resistant? And then you're like, no, resistant. Good. Like, it's not 5 points of resistance, it's like 5 damage.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's quick. Like, okay, that needed 2 seconds of explanation rather than 2 minutes of explanation, which is something I appreciate. Like, as a guy trying to run a game, I won't say I had to run it on the fly, but I mean, I knew about the game about a week before I was running, and like, basically downloaded everything and read through it. And as I say, if I get 15 minutes every 2 days,
But yeah, so those are my feelings. Yeah, ease of play is really high, and like combat's nice and quick, and like the narrative thing works. I don't know. People say the Adventure League is going really good, but I'm skeptical of that because like they handed it off really quick, and there's a lot of that GM fiat in the rules, and I have a hard time believing that goes over well when you're playing different table, because there's like. This much GM fiat in Pathfinder Society, and there's this much in Adventurers League.
Oh.
So how deep into Starfinder have you gotten?
I have gotten 0%.
0%, okay.
0%. My buddy Matt Danick wrote for the Starfarers. And did one of the first adventures out through Rick Jenkins.
Yeah. That's what I've been noticing. I've been wondering.
The idea of noodling as a verb.
I'm wondering about like what spaces they specifically the Starfinder Society were like. Thurston was like, "Don't give me a million magic items, please," or like you know where else he was like, "Hey, in the future for Pathfinder Society's 10-year development plan or Starfinder Society, like this is what we need the core rulebook to not be doing." I don't know. But you haven't read Starfinder yet, so you can't really comment on it. So.
Yeah, it's annoying because I mean, I got to talk with Thurston quite a bit at Skullcon. It's like one of the two cons I go to every year. And like we just sat, me, him, and Jason, and I were just sitting and drinking. And I'm going to tell us tales out of school. But, like, literally, the car pulls up, and we're like, oh, like, we're going to unload our bags. Like, where should we go from here? And Thurston's like, here's a beer. You got me, buddy. And we talked the whole time, but the sad thing is, I would not, if I were thirsty, I Boomer wouldn't be the first guy I would tag to be like, oh hey Boomer, like right, we have Starfinder Society Adventure, or like, oh hey, we have Starfinder material coming out like clockwork every 2 months. Let's get your sticky little fingers in there. But I'm not the guy that I would choose. For any number of reasons. But yeah, it's cool. I like it. I look forward to the first time I have a Starfinder character sheet in hand and can like sit down at a table and be like, hey man, look Starfinder. That does sound like really fun.
Yeah.
And I love Owen Stevenson's whatever Owen posted about his
Wild West, Weird Wild West.
Alright.
Well, we're probably gonna wrap up. Because Savannah will point out that we are at time.
Yeah.
Alright. Well, yeah. Hopefully next week Scott will be able to host, and if not, I will get all of our audio and video stuff figured out to a degree that is functional. But, for everybody who came to show, and we had more people in the chat room today than ever before. At one point, there was even 9 people, which is unheard of. Clinton bringing that celebrity.
Pushing double digits.
Good lord, I can't even imagine double digits. But, I don't know.
Where I get the smelling salts.
Figures the time Scott's not here, everybody shows up. And yeah, for everybody who came in, thank you for watching the show. Obviously, it was fun chatting with you and stuff, and we'll hopefully see you next week when we have. Are we having the Fallout guy on? Did he get back to you or no?
He has not gotten back.
Okay, maybe I'll poke him.
Somebody.
Yeah, there's a guy doing an awesome Fallout 5e thing, and he made a wiki for it. So, like, it's really...
Fall Britannica.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Check it out. Hopefully we'll have him on next week. But if not, we'll have somebody else. And thanks for coming, and... I have to end the show, don't I? Because I'm the host today. All right, yeah. Thanks, everybody.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.